In this episode, we hear from Wendy Burt. Wendy talks about her experiences of her two children who went to special educational needs schools, the lack of opportunity for work, and talks about the Essex Carer Network. Okay, Wendy, could you start by telling us a little bit about Essex Carers Network?
Of course. So Essex Carers Network is actually 15 years old now. And we came about because we felt there was a need for families of people with a learning disability in Essex to have their voices heard. So I've been working with the Essex Carers Network as their coordinator for about 11 years. So Essex Carers Network is all about hearing the voice of families who care for a family member with a learning disability, but also making sure that their voices are heard at a really high level so that their life experiences can inform and influence what provision looks like for people with a learning disability. We came about before we had parent carer networks in the country. So I think for us, now that we have parent carer networks, we've got an absolutely fabulous one in Essex, as I'm sure you're aware, the Essex Family Forum. Parent carer networks work with families up until their children, young people, are 25. And I think for families of people with a learning disability, it's really important that your voice continues to be heard and that you can ensure that the voice of your family member is heard when they become adults. Our focus of our work is from families caring for a family member from age 16 upwards, and that's up to old age. It's really important that families can still be heard and influence as their children are adults.
Yeah, and it is really important because we speak to lots of parents who talk about this cliff edge effect where they might get to the end of school, so that the age of 16, and then, you know, the schools have been really supportive, but when they leave, they don't feel like there's that network. However, you know, there's a prime example that there are groups and there are networks out there that can help.
From my perspective, it's absolutely essential that people have their own voice. So, you know, I would hope that my sons would be able to speak up, but I think sometimes it's having that little bit of help from their parents, or for people with very high support needs who maybe don't use words to communicate, their parents are always going to have to help them to have their voice heard.
Really important point. And I want to go on to next. You just mentioned there about, could you just tell us a little bit about your children and your experiences of their education?
Yes, of course. So I've got two sons, George and Harry. It's Harry's birthday today. He's 26, and it's George's birthday tomorrow, and he's 28.
Happy birthday, Harry and George.
Yes. And they both still live at home at the moment. But they are absolutely looking to what they do in the future. George has a learning disability and he used to have epilepsy when he was younger. And we were told he would probably not grow out of it, but thankfully he seems to have done. So George started off his education in, he went to a mainstream nursery, went to a mainstream school and was there until year three. But he was really struggling to keep up with the curriculum. He wasn't happy at all. So he was assessed and given a statement, as it was then, and then he went to Marketfield School, which was amazing and I'd say was life-changing for him. So when he was in mainstream school, he had obviously lots of people of the same age around him who were lovely and cared about him, but they weren't actually his friends. Mm. He went to Marketfield School. He very quickly became friends with people and did the things that you would expect of a child of his age. He got invited to parties and to sleepovers, which didn't happen when he was in mainstream. So special school was really, really worked well for George. And so he stayed at Marketfield until he left. Harry, again, started off in a mainstream nursery and in mainstream school. And to start with, his needs were picked out around his language skills being tricky. So he then went to a school in Colchester that had a speech and language unit. But again, they started to realise actually it wasn't just his speech, it was a difficulty, it was his learning as well. So he joined George at Marketfield School, and the exact same thing for him, he developed friendships. And I think the really good thing is, so although George and Harry left school a long time ago, they've both maintained their friendships that they made in school, which is really important. The difficulty is that because they went to special school, their friends are not local to us. That's one of the things that I struggle with, that they haven't got local friends. They can't just pop round. So they do still get together with their friends and meet up, but it has to be very carefully planned and they need a little bit of help to make that happen. George and Harry both went to Colchester Institute when they were 16. They went to the Clacton base first. I would say it wasn't the best experience for them, but what it did, it certainly helped with their independence. So both of them, before they went to college, did travel training with the local authority. One of the best things that they did, I didn't think that George would be able to travel independently because he really struggles with spatial awareness and gets lost very easily. But they had the skills to work with him and help him by using photographic cards, which was his next point. So the bus bit wasn't the problem. It was from the bus to the college. What training did to both George and Harry was open up the possibilities of being able to travel and get somewhere on their own. It's huge. So I know a lot of families really worry about travel training, but I absolutely say give it a go, because if it works, fantastic, and they can travel on their own. If it doesn't work, then that's fine, and you go back to having your transport takes you to college or what have you. And in more recent years, so George and Harry both had social care support when they became adults. We found it quite difficult to get the right sort of PA to support them. So they were using their money to keep busy. But after a while, we realised we were finding it really difficult to use the money. So they gave their social care budgets back. But they're both quite active. Harry is a black belt in martial arts. And him and another guy in his group were the first two people in the group to get it. And
wow.
It's an ordinary martial arts club that anybody can go to. So he's really proud of himself for that and loves it. And he's very good with that. He does the forms and the weapons, which he rather likes. George is a West Ham season ticket holder, so ordinarily he'd be at football every other weekend, but obviously, unfortunately, not at the moment. So we obviously now at home are watching lots of football because it's on, all the matches are on television. They both have, I mean, George absolutely has aspirations to go out and get a job and leave home and become as independent as he can be, and we absolutely support him in that and want to make it happen. Harry's not so keen to have a job. Perfectly happy doing what he does, but yeah, definitely wants to leave home. So that's sort of working towards with them now.
Thank you, Wendy. That's a real great insight into both their journeys, how, you know, how they may have had similar experiences, but also different as well. And some of the key things you picked up on there were around friendships and independence. And some of the things that underpin that is, well, one of the main things that underpins both friendships and independence is confidence. And you were involved with our confidence program that was led by two of our ambassadors, Charlie and Mason, and Reach Out, Speak Out. Could you just tell us a bit about your involvement and also why it's important young people have confidence to speak out?
So the first thing is, so when we were doing this piece of work around children, young people. So to start with, the group of people I was talking with were very much around sort of like what could they do as practitioners. So for me, it was actually very much about actually how can we support and encourage young people to have their own voice. So we were hearing that, you know, sometimes parents talked over their children at their reviews and that kind of thing. So for me, it wasn't about sorting out the parent, it was about actually let's support young people to have that confidence so the young person themselves can say, actually, mum, that's not what I want, just let me speak. To me, that's absolutely brilliant and absolutely as it should be. So it was really, really exciting to be involved with this project, and I think it was a really wonderful experience for me. So sitting down in a room with yourself and Charlie and Mason, and I hadn't met them before, and we had this huge sheet of paper, blank sheet of paper, and how they just, I mean, we were absolutely led by them. They just had these wonderful ideas. They took control of that big sheet of paper, and within a few hours, they'd written this confidence building program for their peers. And yeah, it was amazing for me to be part of. I absolutely loved it because they led it, and I know, you know, having been a very small part of the delivery of it as well, to see them in action was amazing. Yeah, it's brilliant. I'm really pleased that I could be part of it.
Of course, and it obviously, as you mentioned, it came from, you know, groups of practitioners working together from different areas, and you know, you were very rightly advocating the use of pupil voice and getting children involved, as was myself But can you just touch on as well, you were involved in another project linked to the 100-day challenge, weren't you? Could you tell us a bit about that?
When we were talking in this group, not only was it about young people having their voice heard, the other thing that very much came out was that families need good information and families need some support to help them to think about what's in store in the future for their son and their daughter or their daughter. So there's a really amazing resource called Thinking Ahead, which was developed along with families originally, but it's around helping families to think about all the things we need to think about. So planning for the future, thinking about what would happen in an emergency, how to make sure that we have good person-centered reviews for our family member. So when we realized that families needed to know that, but actually it wasn't really happening. So the Thinking Ahead guide is embedded in Essex. So all the social workers and practitioners know about it and should be sharing it with families. But the bit that wasn't happening was families having that confidence around the guide themselves. So as part of the 100-day challenge, we put forward that we should be looking to train some facilitators who are families themselves who kind of travelled some of this journey to be able to offer bite-sized workshops around the Thinking Ahead guide for families who wanted to start thinking about the future, wanted to start thinking about planning. So I think throughout all of my journey with my sons, the information and the advice that I have really trusted has always come from other families. So I think for us, it was absolutely important that it was families who became the facilitators to deliver these workshops to other families. They will, in their own geographical area, will have small bite-sized workshops that will run over a period of time. So what we're really hoping to see is that those families who are working together through the plan will also develop a relationship amongst themselves. So hopefully we'll kind of have that little peer support network at the end of it that they'll continue with. So I think it's really powerful. And I think with the COVID-19 that we've had now, I think it's certainly made me think about that I absolutely need to make plans for the future and I absolutely need to know what will happen in an emergency if something happens to me. I want that to be very clear so that people know what the best thing is for my sons, not someone having to guess at what the best thing is.
That's a really interesting point that, you know, if you were looking for support, the first port of call would be other families. And I think it makes total sense. You know, you're the ones that are living it every day. You're the ones that get it. You can have really skilled professionals. However, they're not living it every single day. So it makes complete sense. I want to move on now. I'm going to combine the last two questions because they do link. So we know, and we've spoken about it a few times on this podcast, there's a lack of opportunities for employment for our children. And there's also sometimes a lack of awareness around SEN as well. What do you think needs to change, Wendy, or what can we do to help, you know, number one, create more job opportunities, but number two, make people more aware of our differences?
I think around the awareness stuff that children and young people with SEND are very much seen and part of their community. Because if we're not seeing people that slightly different to us, then we're not comfortable with them. So I think it's absolutely about being out there and being present in the community. But I also think there's something, and I've always said it, Kieran, so I think in schools, when I looked at in schools around different religions, different cultures, different ways, which is absolutely fantastic, but actually you could almost see disability as a culture. So why in schools are people not kind of don't have the opportunity to learn about disability and what it means and how it can affect people and why it's important to kind of accept people for their uniqueness, because we are all unique, we are all different, and it's actually showing that just because you have special educational needs or disabilities, it doesn't make you weird different. You are just who you are. So that for me is really, really important. When it comes to employment, it's recognizing what skills people have. So I think the first thing is that we don't ask children and young people with SEND at a young age what do you want to be when you grow up, and I think we absolutely should, because everybody needs to be asked that question. And I think it's about recognizing that what we say when we're 10 and 11 might be very different to what we feel when we're 16, which might be very different to when we're 20 odd. I certainly didn't end up in the first job I ever picked out for myself.
Same.
I think it's about our those kind of questions. But it's also about helping people to think about what they're good at. What do you really love doing and what are you really good at? And then what kind of job would suit you? Rather than asking someone. So George certainly did some work with a supported employment organisation a while back, and they didn't really explore with him what he was good at. What they did was like, well, what would be a good job? What do you think would be a good job? Well, he didn't know what a good job would be. And he didn't perhaps at that time recognise where his skills were. Mm. So I think it's about looking at what are you really good at? What do you love doing and what are you really good at? And then looking at, so how could that fit into a good job? So some of the things I've heard of late, I think ethics are really starting to look that way, which is pretty amazing because, you know, I'm really hoping that we start to see really good stuff. You know, there's some things that, you know, that people with special educational needs and disabilities are potentially far better at than other people. And actually they are well suited to certain jobs, and we should be looking to encourage that and looking to see the adjustments that need to be made as well to make that happen.
Yeah. And if you've been listening to this podcast regularly, you would have heard those messages over and over again. And it's because it's so true. You know, there are so many skills that our young people have. I've had the pleasure of working with so many different children who, in my eyes, could have been perfect for particular jobs. However, you know, have maybe not realised those skills themselves or haven't had the opportunities to go and express them. So
we need to look at how the interview process works as well, Kieran, because, yes, you know, there's a lot of people who face-to-face interview or even a panel interview, that wouldn't work. But actually, if they were given that opportunity to do that job and be observed in that job, that would be a far better interview to see if they're good at it or not.
Definitely. No, I second that completely. Yeah. And also everything you said around schools and making sure there is more disability awareness on the national curriculum. I think it's got to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Wendy. You've covered so much there in a very short space of time. And I know you've been a brilliant kind of supporter of the multi-schools as well, which is great for us. So thank you very much for everything that you've contributed. And hopefully we can chat again at some point as well.
Yeah. Thank you, Kieran. And I do absolutely love the Multi-Schools Council and the work that you're all doing. And yeah, I wish you lots of success going forwards.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Wendy.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.